Kane is in the building.
And welcome back to the Greg Herenda Show, where we have a pro, Kenny, on the show. An alum, the class of 2019, two-time NEC champion, one-time NCAA tournament winner, the man, Mr. Mike Holloway. Welcome to the Greg Herenda Show.
So, Coach, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm great, Mike. It's weird because that was the first time I ever introduced you as a former player, an alum, and soon to be Hall of Famer. So it's cool, but it's different. How's it feel from your end?
It sounds pretty weird. to hear alumni.
Yeah. But I'll tell you, it feels like I just remember being in that Marriott up on Route 17 like it was yesterday when you committed to us here at Fairleigh Dickinson, man. How fast did the time fly, Mike?
Oh, it went by real fast. I couldn't believe it, honestly. I was just over here talking about it, reflecting on my story over at I spoke at Clint Jackson youth camp. And I was reflecting my story, and I was just starting back thinking. Like, I remember I was in the Marriott, and I was telling people how I only went on one visit, and that was to Fairleigh Dickinson.
Right.
And they couldn't believe me, but I was like, yeah, I just fell in love, and it was one of the best decisions I made in my entire life.
Amen. You grew up in Pittsgrove, New Jersey, to go backwards, and you went to Shalik High School. Tell me about, or tell the listeners, tell Barry Lowe, who listens every week, about Mike Holloway pre-high school. Like first grade, were you that big in first grade, like third grade? When did you make the growth spurt? Tell me about you as a little boy.
I mean, I was always Big Mike, of course. I mean, I was always one of the bigger kids in my class, tall-wise.
Yep.
I mean, I was pretty skinny, more skinnier than I was now, but
right.
I was always the tallest kid, so everyone always called me Big Mike.
Yep.
And I remember you said coming to the games, like, Mike's here. Today, everybody was always excited for me to come and play on the court because I was always one of the better kids.
Yes. And as far as basketball, that was your sport, but did you play football? I can just imagine you with a baseball bat. Did you ever play, like, Little League baseball or T-ball or any kind of baseball?
No, I never played baseball, but I did play football. Believe it or not, I was a running back. I wasn't quite this tall. I was only like 5, like
That's
9.
That's funny.
But I was strong, and like no one could really bring me down. I had one move, and that was stiff arm.
Yep.
I didn't do anything. I didn't juke. I didn't do nothing. It was just, I was running
stiff
through you. Just going stiff arm.
I love it. Now, when did you stop? You would think that you would never stop playing football. Why did you stop? And did somebody make you stop? Did your mom, your dad, or did you just say, you know, hoop is my game?
Yeah, I just pretty much said hoop was my game. I mean, the decision was mine to make. And when I got to high school, I just wanted to devote all my time into just my craft and basketball and
yep.
just school. I didn't want to think about anything else because I knew what I wanted to do in life, and that was play basketball for quite some time, and it's been working out for me.
Now, tell me about your high school career. Like, I probably should know, but we started recruiting you when you were, you know, going into your senior year. Did you play varsity basketball as a freshman, or when was your first varsity experience?
I played as a freshman. I was a two-quarter JV player, I played majority varsity. I came off the bench my freshman year. There was some older senior in my spot. I came off the bench then, but I started my sophomore, junior, and senior year. So, yeah, I played varsity all 4 years of high school.
Where do you rank points-wise at Shalik?
I'm second all time behind Paul Gauss.
Oh, Paul Gauss, that's your guy. Yeah, from Seton.
Yeah.
Paul eventually went to Seton Hall, did he not?
Yeah, he went to Seton Hall out of high school.
Right.
Scored 3,000.
Wow. He scored 3,000 points in high school?
Yeah, 3,000. I said I might not get 3,000, but I could be the second best to it.
What'd you get, Mike? How many did you get?
1,634, actually.
Okay, 1,634. Yeah. This is what I really need to hear, and I'm learning this all after I coached you and we did a lot together. What was the first conversation that you remember having with Grant Billmeyer?
Actually, the first time I talked to Grant was we were at Hoop Group up at Albright.
Right.
He came up to me asking my name and all that. I went to school, and he wanted to get to know me. And then, eventually you guys offered me. He came up to me. He didn't come up to me. Well, I got a phone call. He offered me. And then after that, ever since that day, Grant's been in my phone ever since. He just always calls me to check on me after every game. He was at every single AAU game.
Yes.
Courtside. There wasn't a game I think Grant Billmeyer did miss. And to me, he was bringing you up to one of my last couple games. And you came and you guys showed so much love. And I just remember Grant always just calling in and checking on me every chance he got.
Grant obviously has then moved on to Seton Hall. Your brother plays at UMass. Tell me about your relationship between you and your brother and how much that meant to your development in your game.
Oh, my brother's my best friend, man. We grew up playing the post game our whole entire life together. I mean, believe it or not, he was tripping over the 3-point line when he was coming up in his time. He didn't become he was a late bloomer, unlike myself. I was early. I knew this is what I could do. He was late. He was tripping over his 3-point line and could catch a ball, but then he figured it out. So we just kind of hand in hand worked with each other. Things I didn't know, he taught me. Things I knew better than him, I taught him. So that just helped us turn into the players we are today.
Now, Mike, you come to Fairleigh Dickinson, and this is the pre-NCAA tournament, pre-NEC championship. I think we both knew that we could get it done together, but did you know before you came, or when did you realize that we had something special and that you would make such an impact on our program here at Fairleigh Dickinson?
What I knew was I walked in the locker room and I talked to Darian Anderson.
Yep.
And I asked him. I said, "What do you think about this year?" I said, "How was the team last year?" He said, "Oh yeah." He said, "We were good." He said, "We just were missing a few pieces."
Right.
And he looked at me. He said, "You're a piece that we need. That we need a big guy."
Yes.
And I thought about it. We went out for practice. We practiced. And I came back in. I told him. I said, "Yeah." I said, "You're right." I said, "But we can win with this." I said, "We can win with this team." I said, "We just didn't have a big man." I said, "You can score it." I said, "We had Earl Potts. Earl Potts was getting up and down. He's a high flyer shooter. We had Stephon Jiggins at the point guard." I said, "We got the pieces. We just got to put it up. We just got to come together and get a nice little gel going." And I knew that we could be special from then on.
So Darian Anderson opened your eyes early in your career that we can get it done.
Yes, sir.
And then that team was kind of a special team in that we weren't playing great in the beginning to middle of the NEC schedule, but then we got it going late, and that team was fun, man. And I don't want to compare teams right now, maybe later in the interview, but tell me about that team. What were the dynamics, the personalities that enabled that team to win a championship and go to the NCAA tournament in 2016.
I just think we had the will to win. Like everyone on that team wanted to be an NCAA tournament guy that year.
Right.
And I think that's what drove us. It was so many fights that year in practice. I'm pretty sure you remember.
Yes.
It was so many fights. A lot of guys fighting for spots. We had a lot of talent. We had a lot of depth that year. Guys who could have been starters that didn't get a chance to start. Due to so much depth and experience, we just had so much firepower that, and we bring it in practice every day. The way you coach us, it was just like it all worked out together. And it turned out to be a great year.
No, you're right, because we had so many looking back. Like, you know, you look at Marcus and Earl, who both never, you know, didn't graduate, didn't stay, but just the talent level of those two players. Then Darian and Stephon at the guard position. And then, you know, you had Gasan and you had Malik, and that's not even talking about yourself. So we had just a lot of pieces, and it just took, I think, comparing that team to the 2019 team, everything was kind of in order. In 2016, it was just, we had to come together, and it took us a little bit longer. But which team, Mike, if you stack the teams, not the talent, 16 versus 19, if you put in, you put it in a video game, who wins the 2016 versus 2019 champion FDU night game?
I don't know. That's a tough one.
I know.
You making me decide between my guys, man. And if they hear this, they might not like me no more.
That's okay. That's all right, man. It's, we got to start a little bit of.
Honestly, I might got to go with that 2016 team, believe it or not.
See, I think you're thinking about talent. Now, you're right. I think that team, because the 19 team was not as deep when we lost Xavier and Brandon Powell just came off the bench. The 2016 team had, I would say, considerably more talent. At the end of the game, I'm not sure, man. That was a young Mike Holloway. And we didn't even mention Darnell Edge on the 2016 team.
We're forgetting about Darnell.
And that's exactly, man, that's the deal. That's how, you know, Darnell, I mean, he waited his turn and did what he had to do. But, yeah. I mean, it's really, really hard, but I think the maturity in our program came to the forefront in 2019. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think just from our coaching to our players, like you said, hit me between me and Darnell,
right.
And our coaching, we knew what it took to get back.
Yes.
So it was just like we figured it out, except for that 2016 team, we were doing everything on the fly, and we just played with a bunch of hunger.
No, exactly. Mike, how did I change from 2016 to 2019 as a basketball coach?
I mean, Crazy Greg is always going to be in the picture. That ain't going nowhere. But you definitely, like, just let us be more of, like, just play our game and just, like.
Right. I backed off a little bit, didn't I?
Yeah, you definitely took steps back. But it's like you said, you took steps back, but you, like, when we messed up, you would get on us, of course, like any coach would, but you wasn't really y'all, like, in the mix as much. You let us kind of figure it out, police ourselves.
Right. No, and I think I'm trying to do that as the years go on, because I think that's how you get the most out of players.
Yeah.
You know, you got to set a standard, but I don't want to micromanage. I don't want to tell you what to do every step of the way. And I think our players, yourself, Darnell, Elijah, Caleb, Jaleel, all kind of took ownership in the team. And I felt like in both championships, I let the team be themselves, but especially in 2019, because everyone really knew what they had to do. And I think that had a lot to do with your leadership and Darnell Edge's leadership and being there, you know, once before.
Yep.
Tell me about, like, your guidance at home. You know, people realize that, you know, you have coaches and you have players, but you're a homeboy, man, and you're a mama's boy, and you've got a great relationship with your dad, and you love your brother. He's your best friend. Tell me about, you know, the family behind, you know, Yolanda is she was a huge part of our not only cheering squad, but she was an assistant coach in the bleachers. Tell me about how much your mom, dad meant to you throughout your career here at Fairleigh Dickinson.
I mean, I was blessed to have two great parents who were dedicated themselves to me and my brother and just getting us into college and just doing this whole basketball thing. Right. So I just want to thank them and just, like you said, my mom was always top fan. We used to call her, she was an echo woman, because everything my dad would say under his breath, she would yell it out loud.
She
was just our little, like, megaphone, basically.
Yes.
And she always was on us. But like I said, my father was great. He's taught me how to just be patient and be myself, not only in life but on the court. Like, don't try to be someone else. Like, you're not Steph Curry. You're not out there shooting threes. You're not LeBron James. You might not jump as high. You're Mike Holloway. Be Mike Holloway and figure out what Mike Holloway was good at. And that's one thing I always stuck with, not only on the court, but in life. It's just like, I'm me, and I'm not going to be somebody else.
Yep.
Just, once I figured out who I was and what I was trying to do and established myself mentally in life and on the court, I just ran with it, and I just became one of the best players.
Your balance, the balance between your mom and your dad, I remember going to the AAU games, and your mother was screaming, bro. Get back on D. She knew she had the vernacular. She had the coaching terms down, and she was loud, and she was there for you. And your dad was the silent man, like a big, strong, quiet guy. But you knew just by looking at your dad how he felt and what he wanted from you. You had a balance of two really, really special and great parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take the next level, and your godfather, Uncle Billy. Now, most people that are listening that know our program know my Uncle Billy is my mother's brother, Bill Bergen, and he adopted you. And he became a tremendous fan, still is to this day, a huge fan of our program. But Big Mike was his guy. And tell me about that relationship as the years went along, how much he meant to you just being there and being able to talk to him and confide in him.
Nah, Uncle Billy was my guy, man. Seems like you said, since day one when we won our first championship,
yep.
Me and Uncle Billy took a picture. He made me a screensaver and everything. I mean, me and him developed a really tight-knit relationship. Every game, Uncle Billy came to every game.
Yeah,
Uncle Billy was a great supporter, and I respected him for that. Like, he didn't have to get up every day, especially a guy at his age.
That's right.
He had to get up every day to come support us. Even on our worst days, he always make sure, like, tell us that we play good, even though we know we play bad. Like,
right.
And I respect Uncle Billy tremendously.
Yes.
For who he is as a man, for coming out every day and just supporting us.
Amen.
Even when he didn't have to. And that's always going to be my guy. And that's one guy after you that I'm never going to forget.
Oh, yeah. Now, Uncle Billy was loyal and as loyal as they come. And he's there not only for you, but for all of our players. And then, Mike, your career, I mean, you know, you just look at your numbers, and I always wanted more out of you, and I think that's how you got to the numbers that you got to. You know, you scored just under 1,500 points, so you scored more points in college against higher-level competition than you did in high school. 1,490 points, 788 rebounds, and you were eighth in free throws, sixth in field goals, fifth in free throw attempts. I think you were ninth or 11th in blocks, which I always thought you should block more shots. But you go to two NCAA tournaments. You win the first game ever in the NCAA tournaments, and you are a two-time NEC champion. Like, has it all kind of sunk in yet? What kind of a career that you had here for the Burgundy and Blue?
I mean, it really didn't hit me until like after the fact.
Right.
After it was all done, and everyone's coming up to me telling me what I did.
Right.
But to me, it's like, I'm not done yet. So it's like, I didn't really accomplish anything.
Yeah, I love
They're telling me, like, Mike, you scored, you did this, you scored 1,000 points, you grabbed 800 rebounds, bro, you won two championships.
Right.
That right there was one of the things no one ever lets me live, but they're like, oh, you won a March Madness game, bro. And
right.
I'm just like, it never really hit me until
it's over.
Everyone wished that they did what I did, and it was like, wow, like, I really did something special.
Yeah. Now, you do all that, you graduate, and I'm the – was that weird having your coach be the commencement speaker at graduation, or was that cool? How did you and Nadi and the guys handle me being your commencement speaker?
Oh, we were excited. We were like, yo, just crazy. We, like you said, it's crazy how G's our commencement speaker, right? Like, nothing. We had a goat year, like – G gets a goat gig of being our commencement speaker. Like, this is great. And then it was like watching you up there doing graduation. It was like, wow. And then you like how you gave us like a little fake shout out. It was just fun.
It was cool. You go from there, Mike, and the story continues. And now, congratulations from everyone here back at Fairleigh Dickinson. You sign your first professional contract with BC Odessa from the Super League in Ukraine. Congratulations on becoming a professional basketball player, signing your first contract. What does that feel like, knowing that now, you know, you superseded the scholarship, you got your diploma, and now you're going to be paid cash money or rubles. I don't know what they pay you in Odessa, but they're going to pay you loot. How does that feel to be a professional basketball player?
First of all, thank you, and it feels great, like just to know that all your hard work since you were a little kid is now finally paying off, literally paying off. And it's just like, wow, like I'm really, like I can tell people, like people ask, like, who do you play for? And I'm like, I can say I'm a professional basketball player now. And that's the best feeling in the world. That's what you work your whole, as someone with a dream, you just work your whole life to get to this level.
Yep.
And now that I can, especially when I sign that dotted line and I can really, really like physically say that I'm a professional basketball player, not say that I want to be one.
Right.
It's the best feeling in the whole entire world, to be honest with you.
And just for our listeners and our players out there, have they talked to you yet about your position? Because we talked about it a lot. As a college player, you were a center, a power forward, but you were in the paint. Do they want you to take your game away from the basket? The game has changed all over the planet, and I'm sure BC, Odessa, they have a position for you to fill. What kind of position are you going to play, and what kind of a role do they want you to fill?
I mean, they want me to actually have a pretty good high-level role as a four-man. They want me to play, like, around 25-plus a game,
25
minutes a game. So I got a pretty good gig ahead of me. I mean, like I said, they want me to be a good guy. They said they love how I can step out and shoot the jump shot. They said they love, obviously, my post-game is there. They love that. And they
like
guard all five positions. So they really just want me to just be a mobile guy, a mobile four-man who can occasionally play the three. And like you said, extend my game out, but still do my pull work and hit that jump shot when needed.
Mike, when you go overseas to play as a professional, language, customs, how you comport yourself is so important. Have they talked to you about language and about learning their language and the customs and how the people are, you know, in the Ukraine and so forth and so on?
I mean, they said it's a great city. From what I know, it's on the water and it's beautiful views and things like that.
Right.
And then, like they said, they got people there, they said, to help me out and to help me adjust to the lifestyle. I mean, of course, it's not going to be easy. It's never easy to just up and go to another country, no matter if you're American, Spanish, or anything.
Sure.
Go up and go into a whole different environment.
Yes.
And so it's going to be tough, but it comes with the life.
Mike, when do you leave? Do you have any idea of when you're going to be going over to get into training camp and all that kind of stuff?
I'm actually going to head out at the end of August. I'll get there by September and get the ball rolling in September.
I love it. Hey, Mike, we are so proud to have you on our show as an alum, as a future Hall of Famer, and your professional career is going to start in Odessa. But guess what? It ain't going to end there, Mike. I know you got goals and aspirations. We're going to have you on the show once you get over there for a few weeks. And let our fans and our players know exactly what's going on in professional basketball and in the life of Mike Holloway. I can't thank you enough. Everything that you did for us, for me. You're a great, great person, alum. You're Big Mike forever.
Yes, sir. Shout out my FDU family, man. Thank you for having me, Coach. I really appreciate this interview. Mean a lot to talk about my career over the guy that coached me all 4 years.
Mike, you're the best. You'll never be forgotten here, and I can't thank you enough. And we'll be in touch, and we're going to do a radio show from the Ukraine, and I'm going to hold you to that, and I just wish you all the best.
Sounds good, Coach, man.
All right, brother. Give much love to all the Holloways. Great hearing your voice again, Mike.
Yes, sir. Will do.
And we'll be back with more of the Greg Herrenda Show. After this,
I'm Seth Greenberg, class of 1978. Yes, I am a fossil. Loved my time here in beautiful Harvard on the Hackensack, Fairleigh Dickinson. And when I'm not working at ESPN, doing raps, doing games, doing college game day, you know what I'm doing? I'm listening to WFDU and the Greg Herrenda Show. Doesn't get any better. We don't play, mess around, be on your way, because it ain't enough time.